You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Fisted fashion, try and introduce our guest. But I, did you hear that? That someone's fallen down the stairs. Yeah. If you hear a siren, it'll be the Mica ambulance arriving shortly. I usually introduce the guest, but I know this man too well. I could go through the Wikipedia and find out about him. But you've done some research on him, so you tell me, just
well,
to
I've
give us a
no
snapshot of this man.
I have not done any research at
all
on this man.
Introduce him.
Will you shut up? What intrigues me about our guest, and my first question is the introduction. His name is Steve Price. Steve, I would like to know what you consider yourself, a journalist, a broadcaster, or an administrator, having filled those three positions.
If asked, I'm always happy to say I'm a journalist. That's what I started as a kid, and I get the most enjoyment out of writing as opposed to speaking or appearing on television. So journalist would be my answer, Don.
What about administrator?
Well, I have worked in management, which was an interesting career move because you're required to judge people and judge whether they should still work for you or perhaps move on. And that can at times be brutal. And you have to judge people's worth to the company that you are working for. And they were public companies, so they had a board and shareholders, and so you had to do the best thing by the company. I don't think anyone that I've asked to move on, except for one person, has proven to have the ability required to keep their job.
Okay, now I'd like to ask you these questions as an administrator.
Don,
what would you consider? What?
Don, may I?
What? No.
Please, Steve, you two chat amongst yourselves. Don, please. If people are listening to this, could you say who this man is, where he's come from, how
Steve
he started?
We've done one podcast already, or half a podcast with him already on sport, and he's contributed.
Give people his background, where he came from.
Well, he came from Adelaide.
Who've been his bosses, where he's moved to in his career. Give him a snapshot of who we're talking to rather than just saying, oh, can I ask you a question? That's how you introduce someone, man.
Stephen.
Don.
Radio. As administrator, what do you think is wrong with radio right at this time? And is there something to do you could do with radio? Because I believe that podcasts are a real challenge to commercial or radio, full stop.
I think podcasting is difficult to make money in.
Yes.
And you two probably would be aware of that, or you three would be aware of that. But it is a challenge to traditional radio signals, because just as Netflix and Stan and all of those streaming services have run right over the top of commercial television, whose viewing numbers are as low as they've ever been in history, the same thing will happen with traditional radio, because people have everyone's got a device in their hand that they can listen to whatever they want to listen to. On the day of Donald Trump's loss in the election, I listened to Fox News Radio covering the US election on a Bluetooth in my car driving from Sorrento to Melbourne. So who would have ever thought you could have done that? I mean, we're all old enough to remember you used to have to go onto shortwave radio and twiddle a dial and listen to, you know, other languages or other countries. So, yes, I think podcasting is a very big risk to radio, and there are some exciting things about to happen in radio with things like live streaming and podcasting that is going to surprise a few people, I think.
Explain, please. John.
Stephen Price was born in 1955. He's an Australian broadcaster and journalist. He currently appears on The Project.
Don't trust Wikipedia, by the way.
Well, this gives you a rundown of this man's career, his CV, his expertise in the industry. It tells you where he came from. It's simple just to read it out so that people listening say, wow, that sounds like an interesting man. Let's listen in.
Well, I think Don's done some real research as opposed to just go on and look up Wikipedia. Anyone can do that.
Don't piss him off. I've done real research, Stephen.
How?
Out of the back of my head. I know you're back to front. That's my research, but people who would like to know who you are might like a bit of background as to who you are.
Stephen, radio, you said podcast, radio. How can will radio have to become more podcasting? Will they have to produce more than just have talkback radio? Will a little bit more content have to be involved in putting on a radio show from here on to compete?
Well, commercial AM and FM radio is a business, so the first thing they have to do is make money. And how you make money is you sell your content to advertisers, and if the advertisers like it, they buy ads and you make money. I mean, and that'll continue to be the case, because if you take, say, the Nine Network that owns 3AW and 2GB, both places where I've worked, they purchased the radio to add it to their TV assets and to add it to their streaming services, so they've got a whole bunch of assets that they can make money from.
But you haven't answered my question. Has the content got to be better to keep up with podcasts?
Well, you could make an argument that 3AW is the most successful radio station in Australia. I mean, their breakfast show late last year in the middle of COVID was listened to by 1 in 4 people in Melbourne. That's a massive audience.
Is this one of your brainchilds, the breakfast show on 3AW when you were in a managerial position? Did you put those people, Dean Banks, did you put them on?
I did.
So you're responsible for the most successful breakfast radio team in Australia ever.
What's the saying? Success has many fathers. There's a lot of fathers who claim that success.
Well, you've just claimed it. Just then.
The only reason that the Lawyers, Guns and Money radio show, which was on 3AK at the time, ended up on 3AW...
Can I put my hand up? Was it on community radio?
It started
initially?
On Triple R.
Yes.
Then went to 3AK, you were quite right. And that was Ross Stevenson, a bloke called Dennis Connell.
Yep.
And then they were joined by Dean Banks. The only reason that show ended up on 3AW is I was watching the Grand Prix, Formula One Grand Prix, from Adelaide at Dean Banks's house. And Ross Stevenson was a guest. And we were at the time looking for a replacement breakfast show on 3AW. And me, went to then 3AW General Manager Dennis O'Kane and said, I think we should put Lawyers, Guns and Money on the breakfast show.
You said, so you've taken complete credit for the
most... Well, I'm just telling you what happened.
What happened to the Dennis bloke?
He was a very unusual individual.
He was.
And he was eventually asked to move on.
Did you have to
bracket
do that?
Sacked. Myself and a man by the name of Tony Bell did that, yes, and we ended up in court in an unfair dismissal claim. Now, we all need to be very careful here because Mr. Connell is very litigious and also happens to be a barrister, still operating in the Victorian bar.
And you can tell us the facts, can't you?
Well, he did not win that unfair dismissal case. In fact, he lost that case and we actually had orders against him to pay costs. So the dismissal of that man, okay, so for various reasons,
that's
was
a factual
held to be
outcome the, of yes. what happened. So yep. I don't think. Could I ask you this, Stephen? Of course, I can ask you this. You just mentioned someone told me that you're about to embark. You don't have to answer this if you don't wish. Someone told me that you're about to embark on a very new project, outside the project, which is your star on Channel 10, that might be to do with broadcasting on a daily basis, and your stocks have now been reinvested in your ability to speak to people. Is that
when
right?
When are you going to get to the question?
Yeah. Are you starting a new program, someone told me, or not, or can't you comment?
As a 66-year-old, it's nice to know that you're wanted. Because most 66-year-old white men are being cast aside these days. So I'm in negotiations to do a new radio program. Yes, it's not yet been announced, but with a bit of luck, in some stage later this year, we'll be doing that.
Would it be a similar format to what we do? Would it be a podcast or would it be in a studio? Or would it be what platforms would it go out
on? I think what COVID's done has shown that you can work from anywhere.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter where it comes from. It's just a matter that people find it, which when we announce this, if we do, it'll be easy to access. And I hope it'll be good. I'm only doing it if I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not going to go back and do... I've done breakfast radio with you, in fact. Yes, I've done breakfast radio.
You've done a lot of shows with me, Stephen.
That was not as successful as we hoped it would be. This was Melbourne Talk Radio, of course, in the year 2010. A radio show that, interestingly, you quit and walked out on with it and have never apologised for doing so, because I objected to you using the F word on a mainstream radio station.
I thought you sacked him.
Just a minute. I didn't sack him, he quit.
Just a minute. Did you, how many times have you sacked me? Just before we get on to that.
Never.
Just before we
oh,
get
no,
on.
Oh, no, he's got another story.
Just before we get on to that, Stephen. You by you me saying I used the F word, people think I just gratuitously said, oh, fuck.
I think that was how it happened.
It was not how it happened. Memory? It was in the context of what someone said, and I said to you, do you mind if I say this word because this is what this person or this is how it was framed? Mm. And you said, don't say the word. I said, what's the point of saying what the person said if I don't use the word? And you said, well, I wouldn't say it if I was you. And I said, well, that is ridiculous.
And then you said it.
And you said, well, go on, say it without using the word. And I said, yeah, so-and-so, so-and-so. And he said, well, I'll be fucked or something. And you said, that's it.
Or, no, what happened, the panel operator beeped it cleverly because that was his job.
Oh, I see.
And then you, in a fit of pique, attacked this young man who was being paid basically nothing to be the panel operator.
I see.
And you said that I will never work here again because someone censored me on air. That's what happened.
Well, that might
and be. And that poor young man has probably had nightmares ever since and never worked again.
I was going to say, is he in therapy as we speak?
Yes.
Don't you talk. I've still got PTSD from you being my boss.
When were you, what?
He was my first boss.
Where at?
At AW.
He wouldn't have had a job in the media if it wasn't for me.
So is that where you got your bad moods from off him?
Mate, I learned a lot from Price.
Yeah, I know. And geez, yeah, you've got a few casualties too.
Mate, I enjoyed every minute work with Pricey, but yeah, it was tough. It was good.
Why was it tough?
Why?
He was uncompromising. Mate, he was...
That's what they're saying.
He used to ring me. I was like 12 years old or whatever. I'm joking, whatever. I was young.
What were you doing there?
And
you
I was producing the footy. And the we used to have this hotline. And he used to, like, this fluoro light.
Now, hang on. Can I ask? Was he on
it?
Yeah, Rex?
On. Yeah, and then the fluoro light would go off, right? And you just the fear of God would come through you, right?
And hang on. You were on the panel.
No, I was on the panel. I was producer. There was another guy, Lee, that was a panel operator. And the flashlight would go off. And we'd look at each other like, who's going to pick it up? And Rex and Sam are on air. And you'd pick up the phone, and there'd be no hello, there'd be no niceties. It was just like, it was like the bat phone, right?
Yeah.
And you go, oh, hotline, are you going to tell these idiots to get on with it and stop being fucking idiots, right? Yeah, yep, no worries, and just hang the phone up. You'd never pass on the message because
sending the runner out to give a message and they don't ever give it.
So you'd
go out and tell Don Scott to stop hitting people.
You'd sit there and listen to these idiots on radio.
Well, that was my
didn't
job.
Didn't have anything else to do.
That was my job, Don.
But Don, you can imagine me then going, pushing the button, going, oh, g'day, Sam. Steve just called. He just wants you to stop piss farting around and just get on with it. Just go.
They would know when I was calling. They had a very clear idea of what I was ringing about.
Rex would say,
embarrassing a legend by suggesting he was a dope smoker was one time I rang up and said, get off this subject and get off it now.
That's Ron. Rick.
who was the legend?
We're sitting at the MCG and Rex tried to go to a different level each week. He started off mild, and by the end of the year, he was saying things that honestly, where they came from, I don't know. So he's listening in, Stephen, to the football broadcast, very successful, which Rex was, and there was some weeds growing out of the gutters in the Graysmith stand, and Rex is just, the putty had got boring, and Rex has got the glass. He said, Ron? Yes, Rex. He said, is that what I think it is growing out of those gutters there? And Ron, God love him, said, what is it, Rex? And Rex said, I think it looks like marijuana plants, Rex. Ron. And Ron said, where's this headed, Rex? And Rex said, can I ask you a question, Ron? Have you ever smoked marijuana? And Ron, who's as honest as the day's long, said, Well, I may have had one cigarette in my life or two. Well, that as soon as he said that, Rex recorded that, and every time someone asked anyone a question, Rex would hit the button or ask Leo. Yeah,
I've had one marijuana cigarette, maybe two.
So Steve, it rings you up one day. Rex rings up while we're doing it, and I'm listening, and Rex says, yes, Stephen. The little man that runs this station has rung in, and he's had to get off his phone books that he's sitting on to get to the phone to tell me to stop mentioning anything about marijuana and Ron Barassi and I said, Rex, please to take notice or we mightn't be here.
He said, the reason that happened is that you have regard for Ron, do you not? Absolutely. Sam, I'm looking at you. Don?
Yeah, he's terrific.
So you can't trash the reputation of a legend by being an idiot every Saturday on the football. And Ron had spoken to me and said, Stephen, if marijuana in my name is mentioned on the air again, I will be leaving.
And he did.
And he stormed out when you mentioned
so,
it.
He went and coached Sydney.
He threw his headphones on the ground.
He did. So,
and left.
So he's speaking and Rex said... Rex said, just testing, just going a little bit further each week. He said, now, Ron, he said, the station manager, Stephen Price, has rung in. He said, I think that stuff is still growing there. And suddenly, bang, down go, this is on air. It's during the football. And
off
Rex said, Ron, where are you going? He said, and you could hear from the background, I'm out, that's it.
I remember the thud.
So
but that wasn't the greatest storm out that you and I were ever involved in. The greatest storm out you and I were ever involved in involved you, your friend Polly Farmer, and Rex. And you and Rex had been in Perth.
Oh, yes.
And at a fundraiser for Graham Farmer.
Yes. And my hero.
Your hero. And there was some discussion in the room about Rex's courage as a footballer and whether he was brave or not brave. And you were instructed by Rex not to bring this up on air. So you and Rex and I used to have a 15-minute segment every Friday afternoon at quarter to six.
I'm not going to go on any further. It started off as half an hour. Come in at 5:30, you said, and we'll do sport for half an hour. So I used to do what you did, Don.
Hang on, can I talk? Can I just
Everyone's
got... I know. But can I tell you, so as a young... 3RW was on fire back then. Pricey was running the joint, and he used to let us know that we were in the good old days, and he was absolutely bang on. And the place, and Beersy would say this now, who runs the place still runs on the legacy of Pricey, all right?
I don't know anyone there would say that these days.
Anyway, so my point is, when these two, because it was Channel Rex and Channel Sam, and you had these two like ridiculously expensive cars that would just pull up in the front of the thing, and they'd all turn up, and these two lunatics would sit upstairs waiting to go on air. And all you would hear is, oh, for fuck's sake, how long are we going to... Because they were waiting to go on. And anyway, you take it over from
here. No,
it started out to be 5:30 on Friday night.
Stephen said, you didn't ask us.
Anyway.
I'm not letting you go.
Friday night before the football.
Let's finish the Polly Farmer story, and then you can explain.
You would say, all right, go ahead.
And so you bring up on air the fact that at a WA fundraising function for Polly Farmer, there was questions about one of the people sitting in this room's courage on the football field. And Rex had asked you explicitly not to bring it up. And so, of course, what do? You bring it up. So Rex gets up, storms out, slams the door, goes down and gets into the Nissan Patrol, which is parked next to your Lamborghini, and he takes off down towards Brighton, where he lived, further down.
Barry Morris, yep.
Problem is that after 6, Don, on a Friday, there was a show on 3RW that was only there because we were trying to keep Rex happy. It was called Rex Hunt's Fishing Show. So the host is gone. So I'm required to stay around and anchor the fishing show. Now, I've never caught a fish. B, I know nothing about fishing. And so Rex's son was the producer. He was still there. And so we get up
Matthew, we get up some
bloke called Jono or something to find out if the snapper are biting in the bay or if the whiting are running at, I don't know, somewhere down near Sorrento.
The beacon of Forking.
That was the worst two Forking hours of radio. Beacon. Worst 2 hours of radio I've ever done in my life trying to explain fishing to people.
So did Rex come back to call the football?
The next day he did. He nearly got sacked. The CEO of the company said, "You tell Rex to get back in the car and get back."
Was that Dinger?
Yeah.
No, who was the politician who was the
Nixon.
Peter Nixon. Nixon. Peter no, Nixon. Peter wouldn't have been listening to that.
No, the Dinger Bill.
But hang on. All the shenanigans they got up to, you wouldn't have done anything because it was rating as number one.
And it was very competitive football then because Eddie Maguire, of course, had just started calling ABC football on big. Triple M. ABC was very strong.
Tell us about what happened with you and the Friday nights when you got the shit.
So, if I could, getting back.
But you're right, Don. The point Don's making is when you've got talent that rates, they get away with a lot more than what people who don't rate get away with. It's the same in football clubs.
So Stephen said, didn't ask, just said, now I want you two to come in and do the sport from 5:30 to 6:00. So Don, I used to actually think, oh, right, I'll get some sport here. Tom Brady could be the best footballer that's ever played. We'll mention this. So the first day we did it, we were on, bang on, 5:30. And it was, we had a fantastic conversation and Stephen pretended he knew about sport and all that. The next week, it was 5:25 to 6:00 we got on. The week after, by halfway through the year, we were on at 6:03 because Stephen had been speaking to someone from overseas who had just witnessed O.J. Simpson murdering his missus or whatever. And he said, now look, we've got anything to say about sport. We've got 2 minutes left and we're looking at the clock and seeing you've got to get off for 30 seconds before the hour because they do all the station identification. We had a minute and a half, Rex and I. And in the end, Rex said, we go off air and he said, Stephen, he said, this is fucking ridiculous.
Language.
What? I'm sorry. This wasn't on air. It wasn't on air. We didn't say fuck to Stephen.
We shouldn't say it in front of any microphone ever.
I'm sorry about that. All right. So what you did is you just completely just took us for granted, which is probably how you should have, and you had no interest in us.
I think you took us for granted because, I mean, Don, what he doesn't tell you, of course, is that he chased the money. And so that very successful partnership was broken up because Triple M went to Sam and offered him double what we were paying him. And triple. We couldn't match the money. And so suddenly...
Quadruple.
But he was never as successful on FM and never as successful at that station, Triple M, than he was on 3AW. It just didn't work because I guess their audience was a lot younger and they didn't want to hear from someone of his age.
Who were you working with at Triple M?
That's absolute nonsense. But your first part of you was right.
Who were you working with at Triple M?
James Brayshaw and Brian Taylor and Eddie... And
well, you didn't have the same rapport with them as you had with Rex.
I have very good rapport with those people.
Well, why didn't it work?
I'm just about to tell you, Donald. I had very good rapport with those people, but it was a little more slick and a little more interested in procedure and process over there. The success of 3AW's football, if you like, was that a fact that no one had any idea at any stage, not necessarily me, but what Rex was going to do. And it was people like Stephen and me actually on air. I tried to keep him on track a little.
Dog, Don, would howl at the radio when Rex started calling. That's the sort of noise that came out of the speaker. So Sam's sitting there one day with Ron and Rex, and it was a hell of a dreadful winter's day. And Rex has said, we've just been contacted by the Weather Bureau, the Bureau of Meteorology, and there is a sheep weather alert just been issued for the Western Districts. I think they might have been calling in Geelong at the time. And Ron's gone, no, Rex, it's not sheep weather alert, it's sheet weather alert. Ron had spent his first 68 years of his life believing that when the weather started to turn, the Bureau would tell women to go out and get the sheets off the line. Now, there was no way that either Sam or Rex could convince Ron.
So the Weather Bureau is saying sheep weather, but Ron always misinterpreted it as sheet.
Correct.
For his whole life.
And he not only misinterpreted, he argued on this day that how would you put all your sheep in a shed?
Yep. No, he did. And you
did
say,
he not?
And you say, Stephen, you say... about the marijuana. You know, we sort of made fun of a legend. How would you not say, Ron, please? So Rex, never to let a crisis go to waste. He went right. If he had a thread, he would go on with it and milk it until there was not one left centimetre of water left. So he said, Ron, we've just got in touch with Ivan Snodgrass from the Melbourne Bureau of Meteorology. Ivan, are you there? And Rex would do the voice. He'd say,
yes, Rex, I'm here.
He said, Ron thinks that went on with this. Is it a sheet or a sheep weather alert?
Well, Rex, it's a sheep weather alert to let the farmers know to bring their...
Thank you very much, Ivan. Ron... And Ron said, well, I didn't realise that Rex was doing both voices, and said, that's extra. All right, Rex. He said, well done. He said, good. I didn't know Ivan was going to say that. So,
what a great man he is, Ron. What a fabulous person he was on the radio.
Remember the rower? Who was the guy that called the rowing and we got in trouble?
That man. What's his name? Did these public schools rowing.
From Channel 7.
No. Just some bloke who used to call in and used to say, oh, it's on at half time. Do you want me to call it? Yeah, whatever. And then Rex said some horrible things about him and we got sued.
It was unique. It was certainly unique.
That's right. And he said, and he spoke to that man, he said, is it true that.
No, don't.
No, we can't.
No, he said, is it true to this man who is just a very nice
rowing commentator?
Very nice man. He said, did the Lady Mayoress go down and kiss the cocks of the winning crew, Frank? Frank said, what? Did she kiss
We don't need to say it twice.
Well, if you're not familiar with throwing, a cox is COX and it's the person that sits at the back of the skull.
I'm well aware of
that. So he thought he'd be esoteric, speak in esoteric terms to this man, and the bloke had... that was the end of him. Yeah, he said...
Can I just repeat that Ron was fantastic on air for us?
Yes, I know you've said that.
And he actually... this is the sort of bloke he was, or is... not dead. He asked me to meet him at the coffee shop down on the corner of Bank Street, South Melbourne, where 3RW used to be. And we both ordered a coffee and a bacon and egg sandwich. And he said, I've just got to ask you for permission if I can get out of my contract on the radio. And I said, why would you want to do that, Ron? Because, you know, paying him reasonably well. He said, oh, they want me to go and coach the Sydney Swans. And I know that if you say no, I won't be able to go and do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I said,
that is the integrity and the honour of that splendid man, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct. So he would have, if I'd said, look, we've got a contract for another 2 years, you can't go.
Fantastic.
Of course we let him go.
No, I saw Ron a couple of, 6 weeks ago. Very...
But Don, to your point, the fact that there's a line you can't cross, but you have to let creative people have the freedom to be creative. You know, I mean... You can go all the way back to Graham Kennedy and the success of someone like that was because he was able to freewheel while he was doing his job. These guys, Rex was a sensational football caller.
Football was just incidental in the end.
Yeah, it was a vaudeville show that used to bob up every Saturday and Sunday afternoon.
And then he'd I wanted to ask you just shortly about yourself, but then he used to introduce after a whole night of football and calling, he used to introduce a woman called...
Don't go to the Helen Jackson story, please.
Helen Jackson.
Don't.
The horn and porn
show. Don't.
She used to give advice about relationships and Rex...
Hang on. Who's Helen Jackson?
Helen Jackson was a woman who used to give advice, a very charming woman. She used to give advice on relationships and if you weren't getting on and sexual...
On
problems,
radio.
Yeah,
on radio.
So footy finished at 10:30 p.m. in those days.
Right.
And we had an hour and a half of... a sexual relationship program hosted by Helen Jackson. Now, again, it was on air because it rated through the roof.
Because Rex used to say, well, the final score is Hawthorn 60, and just before we hand over to Helen,
We're handing over to Helen Jackson, who is standing by with the microphone for the Horn and Porn Show. And if you've got any problems about getting it up or having anything, she said, Helen can come round and look at you and work out why you can't get it up. He used to rip the big shit out. And Helen, he'd cross it and said, thank you very much, Rex. Thank you. And
quite remarkable radio. I mean, there were people ringing up.
It was extraordinary.
For sex advice.
Oh, yeah, no, people ring up. So, yeah, no.
You used to listen to it on your way home. Religiously.
I did, because Rex had... I did. And people would say...
Okay.
No, yeah, all right. Okay. So if you, Stephen, so you're an opinionated person.
Am
you're
I?
Actually even a man. Well, you are. That's why you get the gigs, and that's why you... Or else that's why we all get the gigs, I presume. Have you ever transgressed or been told by Channel 10 or any employer that you've had that ever been counselled for something you've said or been warned or... probably on a daily basis, Stephen, or not? You're too smart for that.
I've made some mistakes, like everyone with a live microphone. When we've just been through the Eddie Maguire issue, and I wrote a column about Eddie last week defending...
Yes, very good column.
..defending him. But when you work live on radio or television, you do make mistakes. I made a dreadful blunder. I made a mistake on air on Channel 10, which cost the network a considerable amount of money. I can't really go into details because the settlement was confidential, but it involved the Corby family, Chappelle and her sister Mercedes. About 2 years ago, I was referring to Jacinda Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister, and I said, I'm getting tired of that woman. That caused some consternation, and I actually went on air and apologised, and I said I shouldn't have described her as that. I should have just described her as New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. I think what I said was misinterpreted, but if I make a mistake, I'm happy to apologise.
You wouldn't think that you would just you would apologise because they asked you to. You wouldn't think that's a mistake. No one would think that's a mistake except the very woke.
I offered to apologise because I felt that I had described her too aggressively, and she didn't really deserve that at the time.
Now, you, Don?
I'd just like to, just going back, do you want to follow that line of question? No, because I'd like to follow his career more. If you've got Dean Bank, you've put on a radio show which is still going today, you had a successful football career, football show, you talked about the lady Helen Jackson coming on. Obviously, 3AW was up there, you were program manager. Why did you leave 3AW? Could have sat back for a while.
This will be good. This is chasing the money.
Some of us...
And where did you go to and what did you do?
Yes, I went to Triple M for the football because I chased money. Have a listen to this answer.
Okay, go on.
I was program director and doing the drive show on 3AW. And in 2002, very well-known broadcaster Alan Jones in Sydney was number one on radio in breakfast at 2UE. And he was convinced by John Singleton to leave for money and to go from 2UE to the opposition 2GB. 3AW, the network, owned 2UE at the time.
Southern Cross.
Yep. And the CEO, Tony Bell, rang me and said, we want you to do breakfast in Sydney.
Replacing Alan Jones.
Yep. So that was like jumping off a cliff.
Easy gig.
Yeah, really easy gig. I'd never lived in Sydney. I had no clue about Sydney. I don't know if you've worked in another city, but if you're working on radio, you have to have some inbuilt knowledge of the place you're broadcasting to, or you can...
So why would they do it?
It's like treading on glass.
Why would they do it and why did you do it?
I did it for the money and to see whether I could be successful in the biggest city in Australia, and it was a tremendous challenge, and I was rating really well on 3RW at the time, and I thought that I could just replicate that by shifting... it didn't work out that way, and I lasted on breakfast for just 18 months, which I thought was fairly unfair. Our numbers were not great, but I think to terminate that job after 18 months was a mistake. And the way it was terminated was quite brutal. I was driving to a boxing match featuring Anthony Mundine. My telephone rang and it was the CEO of the company, Tony Bell. He said that Graham Mott, the general manager, and him would like to see me in a hotel room in Sydney. I turned up. I had no idea what was coming. I got a fairly decent clue when just before I went into that meeting, my phone rang and it was a reporter from The Australian who said, "We think you've been sacked from breakfast. Is that right?" I said, "I don't think so." And I was 10 minutes later. And I went to the boxing match and the great John Laws was there on the other side of the ring, sitting in ringside seats. And, of course, John made a big show of coming over and giving me a big hug and saying, "We're going to miss you, mate," which, of course, was rubbish. And then that was the picture on the front page of the Telegraph the next day. So, long story short, I left because I wanted the challenge and the money was better.
Can you tell us about John Laws and Alan Jones and those blokes?
Very interesting personalities to work for.
John for Law- or with?
With and for. Lawsy is a legend. And he came into my office one day and threatened to beat the shit out of me. I'd had a crack at him.
You'd have him covered, wouldn't you?
No, he's a big man, Lawsy. And back then, not now perhaps, but back then he could certainly inflict some damage if he wanted to hit you. And I thought
he
was going to hit me, yes.
In the most prestigious... Lives at the end of a pier, doesn't he?
His house is like an art gallery. He's got a Rodin sculpture in there that would be...
You took me there one day.
Yes, I did. After lunch with him, because you asked me to arrange lunch with John Laws because it's something you'd always wanted to do. You had this sort of obsession with him.
I went on his on the John Laws show, you know, and he used to interview people.
Mm.
Never met him ever until I sat down. He said, "Welcome to Sam Newman." So anyhow, go ahead.
And so Lawsy, I had a crack at Lawsy. We had a function somewhere that was celebrating 50 years in the media for John Laws. And there was a TV camera out the front. And what they did was ask all of the people who had a profile coming in what their thoughts about John Laws were and what their memories of him were. I stupidly said, "Look, you know, the lingering image I'll always have of John is that awful hair he's got, which is like Brillo and coloured green." And, of course, they ran that on the Nine News that night, and his wife, Caroline, happened to be watching, and so she instructed John to go and sort me out the
Fair
next
enough
day.
Too.
Why? His hair was awful.
No,
he, was
and
a
Alan Jones.
He was a singer on Bandstand before he was a...
No, he was a host on Bandstand.
He was a singer. I remember him singing as a kid.
He was Ed Sullivan. He was the Ed Sullivan of Australia.
No, Brian Henderson,
was the host. I'm not sure. Lawsy might have sung a country and western song.
He did that trucking song. Mm. Or that, you know, that.
Oh, he did too. Big Buddy.
He would have made more money in the media than anyone else in Australia out of radio. Longevity, smartly knowing when to move from station to station. Big sponsors like
he went
Toyota.
600 stations around the country, didn't he?
Yeah. I took over from Alan Jones. I had a brief period doing the drive show, then I took over when John Laws retired.
So tell us about Alan Jones.
Alan's a complex man, very successful, clearly, as a sports coach. Now, you guys understand much more about coaching than me. You know, Alan has never played rugby.
Exactly.
Ever. He was a school teacher.
It's correct.
And he brought to the coaching role of the Wallabies, and he had a clean sweep in the UK. He beat England, Scotland and Wales. He coached the
New
Wallabies
Zealand.
To beat the All Blacks. He was a teacher. His skill as a sports person was he was a pretty good tennis player, but he was a coach of schoolboy rugby. And rugby was very much an amateur sport when he took over the Wallabies. And he coached them to extraordinary success. But when you talk to someone, and I know Nick won't mind me saying this, I don't think,
to
a great like Nick Farr-Jones, I say, well, what was it about Alan and his coaching that made you such a successful rugby team? And he said, look, Alan made us believe in ourselves, but we then went out there and we worked out how to execute the game plan.
Yeah.
It wasn't Alan's game plan. Alan just gave us tremendous self-belief that we were the best.
Plus the fact, if I can interrupt, he had some pretty good players at Campese on a wing.
The Yeller brothers.
Oh.
So Stephen.
Yeah, just hang on, John. Hang on, John. So,
Know,
he would be, you know, by having that talent would also translate to him being a coach.
He inherited a very talented group of players. There's no doubt about that. But you can have the greatest individual talent and not get it to perform as a team. And I think that's what Alan did. As a broadcaster, he's been extremely successful. He's been number one in Sydney for more surveys than anyone else. He's now left. He had a falling out with Nine. They didn't want to renew his contract, and he's now on Sky News. I think Alan, in the end, became a victim of what we all, particularly us sitting around these microphones have to fight off these days is the woke brigade who go after you. We've seen another scalp, Eddie, on a high, on a pike now. That happened this week. Alan,
do you think it's a fad, the woke thing that's going on at the moment, or do you think it's ongoing?
It's very much ongoing. Once these people have a success like they have had with Eddie and with Alan,
Who are these people?
Well, in the case of Alan, he said a couple of things on air that he shouldn't have said, and he apologised for them. But they decided that they would go after him by attacking the sponsors on the radio station that were paying to have ads on Alan's program. And I filled in for Alan after this all happened. And you would normally, in a show like that that rates number one, have somewhere between 14 and 16 minutes of advertising an hour every day. It was, when I last filled in on it, there was about 3 minutes. So the advertisers deserted the station and the show because they were shamed by a bunch of keyboard warriors. One group of them is called the Mad Effing Witches. As far as we can work out, they number a very small number of people, but they just sit and monitor and monitor and monitor media, and they then harass advertisers. Now, I know I have good friends who are advertisers on that radio station who would get hundreds and hundreds of email complaints every day because their ads were heard on that program. And eventually the pressure becomes too much.
Hence the quote that we read out at the start of this podcast before you were here. Bloke says, I'll tell his name, Charles Warra, says, we are now in an era where 5% of the population are dictating what the other 95 do. And he said 5% is probably a bit rich. Probably it's 2 or 3%.
But that's always the case, isn't it? Even when the right was in control. It's always a small minority that runs the... It's just it's changed.
It's much worse now. I think it's much worse now.
So
I mean, part of the reason I think, and we'll find this out eventually, that Eddie did what he did, stepping down, I've got no doubt there was heavy pressure on the sponsors of the Collingwood Football Club.
Yeah, they come out and said that, yeah.
For him to be moved aside. And CGU, the insurance company, I think, took a million of their sponsorship out of the current deal and diverted it into Indigenous programs. I think there would have been huge pressure on Holden. All of those sponsors would have been under pressure.
So just...
Finally?
No, not finally.
Yeah, I know it is. He's got to go.
All right, finally. Damien Hardie, you're a Richmond man.
Yes.
Very keen Richmond supporter.
I am.
There seemed to be a tremendously uneven and unfair, this is my opinion, opinion about Damien Hardwick taking up with someone else at a workplace that he left his wife, which I would have thought is only between those two. How can that possibly, when you see people break up on a daily basis, how would that possibly have anything to do with anyone?
Well,
or
silly.
Do you not think that's right?
Silly of you to ask that question. I mean, anyone with a profile... What news is about these days is clickbait online. So if you put a famous name, whether it's Don Scott or Sam Newman or Steve Price or Damien Hardwick, on a story, people will click on to find out what that story is about. Now, marriages...
What about you and me speaking?
We've had enough marriages
between us, Stephen, to field
a football team.
But to say that his legacy, like... Oh, jeez.
Yeah, but Richmond's legacy is
in doubt because
who says that?
Caroline Wilson.
Okay,
said
but
it,
Richmond, on the other hand, are coming out talking about extending his contract. So isn't that asleep now? That story.
I thought it had gone away. I can't imagine it's going to have an impact.
Keep dragging it up because they want to show that their particular opinion, their pompous, arrogant opinion about being the moral arbiters in life is all important when it's just bullshit. So did you know Madeline West? Do you know who she is? And Shannon Grant, you know they've split up. They're high-profile company. The chef and the actress.
Yeah,
from View to Mond.
Yeah.
Well,
Shannon Grant, is it? That's the footballer.
Shannon Bennett. Yeah. I beg your pardon, quite right.
Bennett.
Thank you for clear. Shannon Bennett.
That was been in the papers.
What a snippet. It doesn't get the headline. Damien Hardwick.
Football's the biggest story. Football has been and always will be the biggest story in Melbourne. You know, that story wouldn't have got any coverage at all in the interstate media.
I was just going to say, how does it rate interstate what's going on in Melbourne right now? Sydney, they wouldn't care about it.
Don't care. Couldn't give two hoots.
Even the Eddie story was low on the Daily Telegraph site. I had a look.
So
around Australia, it's nothing, Steve.
No, not outside Melbourne.
Oh, well, I was...
Maybe Adelaide.
I was interviewed from Perth and Adelaide yesterday on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're football states.
Oh, well, yes.
But you're a tart. You go and talk to anyone who rings up.
Yeah, no, no. As a matter of fact, I do. If someone wants to ring me up and ask me would I speak about something, I'm very happy to do it.
Then
now, finally, Stephen, you're talking about, finally, big things that have happened. Tell me if I've got this wrong. I might have. You were on air or overseeing the station when two of the biggest stories, I think, happened during a football broadcast game. One was Lady Di's death and the other was Martin Bryant down at Tasmania. I believe...
And the other one...
And you rang in and I think I've got... Just tell us.
The other one was Thredbo when on a Saturday afternoon. I remember finishing drive on the Friday saying that I didn't think Stuart Diver would get out of that cave. And about mid-afternoon, I was at Princes Park watching Richmond play actually that day, and Stuart Diver was rescued, and you guys covered it.
Broke into the football.
Broke into the football. Lady Di, definitely. We broke into the coverage.
Yeah.
But I don't think we took the football off air completely. I think
no,
we got
didn't.
You guys to cross regularly I'll with updates.
We had Michael Johnson ready to go, right?
Michael Johnson, the runner.
Yeah. So I was so that was my first sort of get, right? You know what I mean? Like I say, and I said to Hutto, "Have we got him?" And he said, "We're waiting, waiting, waiting." And then eventually Hutto goes, "Mate, he's coming around the boundary now." It was Carlton Collingwood was playing. And he was coming around the boundary, flanked by half a dozen security guys. He got into the box, and put his cans on, and the boys are all you know introducing themselves to him, and I can't get to him. And then Greg Diet went flying into the studio. Goes, "Come to me." I said, "What?" He goes, "You're going to come straight to me." I said, "Mate," and he goes, "Mate, she's dead." And I went, "What?" Anyway, I couldn't get him because they're all got the cans off. And eventually I said, "Rex, you have to go to the studio."
And
he said,
"I remember,
yeah, funny one, mate." I said, no, mate, serious. I said, "Biggest story in yours or my lifetime."
I remember what Rex said. He said, "All right," he said, "it want to be a pretty big story." Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to actually tell him what it was. I had to say, "Just go." So he didn't know. So keep going, Sam.
No, and he said... "This will want to be good. We're about to speak to the world 400 or 800 metres."
He was huge.
Huge, that time. Michael Johnson, and we'd worked tirelessly. Well, I hadn't, but Rod hadn't, all around to get him. And Rex said, "All right," he said, "well, this would want to be good. This want to be a very big story if we're going to break in and not speak to Michael Johnson." And sure enough,
Lady Di. Extraordinary.
And you.
And we didn't interview him. We didn't speak one word to him.
And you then. Now, just. I'm sure you were on air or. What happened with Martin Bryant when.
It was a Sunday, Alf, and yes. It was the Sunday after Trevor Barker died, and we were broadcasting Footscray versus St Kilda from Waverley, sure. And doing the whole tribute, and then we dropped it, and then Pricey came flying in, and I learned a few lessons that day. I had to produce for you.
Yeah, and that was a tragedy of Bryant. I went down there the next day, Don, and they took a group of journalists into the Port Arthur precinct. And I can still remember it to this day. They showed us a tree where Walter Mikak's wife and children...
Walter Mikak?
Police, Walter Mikak. Yep. His wife and two children were shot by Bryant. So when Bryant... shot all the people at the Broad Arrow Cafe. He left and drove his car up the road on the way out of the Port Arthur precinct. He stopped because he saw Walter Mikak's children and wife, got out, shot the wife, Madeline and Alana with the children's names. There's still a foundation in their names. He chased one of the children around the tree and shot the child and then shot the other one.
Oh, God.
And, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, what we saw there is just chilling.
So I've been there since, long time after. I think you can still go in. If they stop people going
no,
in.
No, you can still go there.
Yeah, you can go in and see. Sounds very... you still see the bullet holes in the...
Yep.
They must have it as a sort of a shrine.
Almost.
To show just how... you can still go and see it, where all the bullet holes are, where they're all shot.
But that's what made 3RW such a great station, that, you know, you had blokes like Sam and Rex on air at that time, and, you know, all the jokes aside... they could still cover those stories without any drama.
Now, Stephen.
Sam.
There's just a raft of stuff that you've done and we haven't touched on, but you're a very good man. Have you sacked me ever? Several times, probably.
No, I don't think so. You've walked out on me more than I've sacked you. I don't think you've ever been sacked by me. No.
Now, you
why do you keep coming back, Stephen, if he's walked out on a number of times?
No, I have not.
Because he's a good friend.
Oh, yep. You say you do it on a friendship base, not on ability.
No, of course he does it on ability. Now, did you just know Ernie Sigley, who is not in great shape at the minute, has dementia and has for a number of years. Did you got him on the station, did you?
I did. Yep. I met him one night at the Logies and hired him to replace a woman who's now a senator in the Australian Parliament, Sarah Henderson.
Yes.
So, yes, Ernie came and worked for us. He was an unusual man.
Unusual.
Difficult sometimes.
I worked for Ernie on Channel 9 and 3AW used to do the sport. He sacked me three times, Ernie, because if you disputed anything he said or you challenged what he'd said, he said, Michael Johnson, Magic Johnson was earning $60 million a year playing basketball. I said...
Well, my link with Ernie goes
playing
back.
Basketball. Goes. I said, not playing. He said, he might get endorsements. He said, no, playing. I said, that is nonsense, Ernie. And he sacked me.
My link with Ernie goes back to when I was about 6 years old and he was doing the In Adelaide Tonight television show. My father was a car dealer and my father had been tipped off, Grange, sadly departed Grange.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Had been tipped off that Ernie was going to slag off the car that my father had sold him. So underneath the old TV in our lounge room, we had one of those reel-to-reel tape recorders. And every time Ernie would come on, Dad would push the record button, hoping that Ernie would bag him. So one night Ernie gets on and says, this Dodge I bought from Dependable Motors, that was the name of the car yard, it's a heap of shit and I can't, the bloke who sold it to me ripped me off and it's a rust bucket and... Dad's in beauty, I've got him, dang. Sued him and won.
Oh, fantastic. Now, Stephen, we're only winding this up because you need to be wound up because you're going somewhere, aren't you?
Yeah.
Stephen, thank you very much. You're a good man.
Thank you.
Yeah, very delightful interview.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pricey.
Press the button, Rocket.
Rod, no.
Yeah, I couldn't think of what you called.
Open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, baby.